The Tom Woods Show, episode 778.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, don't be envious of me just because I'm getting the best shave of my life. Join me. Get your free trial set from Harry's. That's a razor, five-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. Plus, they're tossing in a post-shave balm. And all you gotta do is pay three smackers for shipping. So head over to harrys.com. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. And enter code Woods. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Today, we're talking to a very successful, let's say, content producer online in the libertarian tradition. Very young guy, too. He's editorial content associate at FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. He's known online as That Guy T. His name is Talid Brown. We've never spoken before. We've had a little bit of back and forth on Twitter, and that's as far as it's gone. But I thought, this is an interesting guy. He's a successful guy. He's got a substantial following online. And I'm curious to know about how you build that up and also to talk about some of his ideas. This is going to be a great conversation. Then stay tuned for what is coming tomorrow, because if you're hearing this the day of release, we're talking on election day. So this is the last day I'm going to be talking without knowing who's going to be elected president. So the next episode, 779, I'll tell you a little later what we're going to do for that. But Talid Brown, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know where to start with you, because I could talk about social media. I could talk about having the reach that you have at such a young age. I could talk about your background and how you came to all these ideas. So I think what I'm going to do is talk about all those things. I just checked and you're at over 80,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is a pretty good chunk of subscribers. And you're how old?
I'm 22.
Yeah, in fact, I just said I wasn't going to ask you that on the air, and here I am doing it. So I appreciate your look. If you were 87, maybe you wouldn't want to answer that. But 22, you want to tell the whole world that you're producing at your level at age 22. I'm like, you've really, really got it put together. You got the whole package. You got the smarts. You got the technical savvy. You got the following, and you're only 22. So the only question is, we got to figure out how to monetize this for you. But that's a separate episode. That's entrepreneurship episode. Let's stick to the topic here. Tell me about your background. Where are you from? And you mentioned that. Where'd you go to school?
Well, I'm actually from Atlanta. Born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, and. As far as education, I went to Martin Luther King Junior High School, and I was almost about to drop out of there, but I ended up finishing at another alternative high school, Elizabeth Andrews, in the same area. And after that, I went to a like 6-month IT training course just to build up some skill sets. But outside of that, I've never really had any type of formal college education.
Whoa. All right. Because I just watched a video you did where you were answering objections to anarcho-capitalism. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, and I'm not trying to kiss up to the – I don't kiss up to guests on the show. Well, I don't know. There are a few guests I kiss up to. But that's like Ron Paul and one or two other people.
Yeah.
I'll just come right out and say – but they were questions that some of them I thought, well, I'm sure I could come up with an answer if I had some time. But offhand, I wasn't really sure. And then I listened to your answer and I thought, yeah, that's it. That's what I'd say, pretty much. So you had this great, that was the one you sent me when we were talking on Twitter. And so I started with that. And then I went back and looked at, you've covered a wide array of topics. You've been featured on a lot of other shows. Tell me, first of all, how did you go from 0 YouTube subscribers to 80,000? Are you using any paid methods, or is it just the sheer force of your content?
So far, it's really just been the content. I mean, I'm now just now, like in the last week, looking into Facebook advertising and things like that. But prior to that, it's all been completely organic by me. My first big break was this video that I did called My Beef with the Transgender Community, when I was just kind of actually getting involved and learning about transgenderism and things like that. And I was actually met with a ton of backlash of, you know, how I should check my privilege and how I'm a cis male and I shouldn't be able to counter these ideas or actually debate different things of, you know, different subjects of gender that I can't really understand. And I made a response to some people and just venting my general frustration with that. And it ended up becoming the number 2 top trending video on the front page of Reddit for about 16 consecutive hours. So from there, I was at like 2,000 subscribers, and I jumped up from there to like 28 in a day. So
28,000. So you gained 26,000 in one day.
Yeah, that was pretty significant.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, that's a good chunk of all the YouTubes. I mean, most of my episodes are not really. I have a YouTube version for people who stubbornly refuse to get a podcatcher, but I deliver them through iTunes and stuff. But all the same, I did used to make videos in my day, and I would have been pretty happy with 26,000 over the course of a year.
Yeah.
All right. So now you're at 28,000, and you think, all right, now I'm really cooking with gas. Now, what's the next phase in your progress? First of all, how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it now for about 2.5, maybe going on 3 years. Maybe about 3 years. So after that big jump, I just went full force and I just put out continuous content. Not to the point of, you know, every day or anything, because I personally can't handle that. But at least like, you know, once a week, and there was pretty consistent. My channel just grew from there. And after that, I actually stopped, because that was around the time I went to school for IT a little bit. So I didn't have time to do as many videos. And I noticed that my audience, when I was, you know, consistently putting it out, when I just stopped full force, my average viewer rating stagnated pretty significantly and started to drop a bit. And from there, I was trying to work my way back up. When I actually got back into it, I did a few collabs with some other pretty high profile channels like Sargon of Akkad. I went on shows with Rebel Media, with Lauren Southern. I just recently did a interview on the Rubin Report.
I saw that got a lot of views.
Yeah, yeah. And it was actually well received. I'm like, okay, I'm going on. Well, Rubin's a classical liberal now, so I guess I'm somewhat friendly to his audience. But yeah, outside of that, it was just consistent content putting out. And I think a little bit of shit posting on Twitter may have contributed. But outside of that, yeah, it's just a little average millennial hustle, I guess you could say.
That's really, really tremendous. All right, now I want to ask you the meatier sorts of questions. And let me be perfectly blunt. You don't match the demographic profile. You halfway match the demographic profile in the anarcho-capitalist community because you're a man.
Yeah.
We all know those demographics all too well. But you're coming from Atlanta. You're black. You're 22 years old. You're supposed to either be a Bernie Sanders supporter or more likely support Hillary.
Yeah.
And instead, you don't even think in terms of election and candidates. And this isn't even your thing. So explain to me, tell me your story. I don't want to call them conversion stories because it's not a religion, but you know what I mean. A lot of people are curious to know, how did somebody go from having what I shouldn't assume, but a lot of us started off with fairly conventional views, and now we have views that are highly unconventional. What was the first step for you in going from one to the other?
Well, for me personally, the first step was actually a little bit insanity, because it was actually the first actual involvement I got in politics was actually through kind of Alex Jonesy, you know, SACF prepper situation types, which I still enjoy some of their stuff, especially now Alex Jones is coming back on the map, you know, providing wonderful comedy entertainment for everyone. But prior to that, I was really apolitical. I didn't care about politics. I supported Obama a little bit, you know, when I wasn't old enough to vote at the time. But I supported him mainly because Ludacris made a pretty good music video for him. But outside of that, I didn't care about politics. I actually cared about more so things like business, entrepreneurship. I always admired things like CEOs, people who acquired wealth, you know, via their own means without going through traditional methods of, you know, going to school, going to be a doctor and, you know, getting a regular 9-to-5 and paying the bills. That never really appealed to me. I always really liked the ambitious mentality of the 1% or greater 10% entrepreneur. And from there, when that kind of dove into my Alex Jonesy stuff, and Alex Jones, whenever I watched him, he always did mention this little thing called liberty here and there in between the water filters and the lizard people. But from there, I started listening to things like Ron Paul. I started listening to things like John Stossel. I got a little conservative Tea Party-ish for a while. But then on Twitter, some days when I was mainly just debating other people in politics, that's mainly where I got most of my views from, just actually talking to other people who also just think about these things. And I kept getting these crazy, you know, anarchists just constantly hitting me against my minarchist views and like, yeah, so you don't think taxation is theft? You really think we need taxes to build the roads? I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? But after that, you know, I just constantly considered, you know, I just constantly went through different levels of introspection and kept challenging my own ideas and actually seeing how they work out, going through different scenarios, different hypothesis theories, and actually see, does this hold water? And if it doesn't make sense, you know, I'm not afraid to, you know, say, yeah, this really doesn't make sense to me. So I'm not going to adopt it, or I'm going to reform what I'm thinking. And that path eventually led me to anarcho-capitalism.
I'm going to ask you a really raw kind of question here, and it's probably an annoying question to deal with, but I want to get it out on the table. It is not uncommon these days to hear people say, look, let's face it, the demographics of the libertarian movement are white men overwhelmingly, and that's what it is. And instead of running away from that or pretending that it could be otherwise or having outreach to other groups, let's face it, this is a white movement, and if it weren't for whites, we wouldn't have a movement, so forget it. Now, you have probably run into this, and I want to know how you would answer people like that.
Yeah, I run into it quite a bit, actually. Actually, when I just started my internship a few months ago at the Foundation for Economic Education, this guy who I was actually in somewhat good acquaintance with, he was a little bit of a Nazi, but we were sociable. And he, you know, right when I started working at the FE, they were like, you see, this is what I mean. You're going to this lefty organization, you know, you're this is why libertarianism is a white man's movement. Give up your charade. You're just a token black guy in the movement. The thing is, you know, one, I'm not that enamored with identity politics. You know, I don't really go out, you know, and try to be the best black libertarian I can be. You know, I don't try to use my race as a way to market myself. I don't use it as like a gimmick or anything. I mean, I'm sure it may come across that way, you know, just naturally when it's just, you know, so rare to see in this in terms of this political philosophy. But when people say things like, you know, this is a white man's movement, you know, we can't appeal to the black vote, you know, we need you know, different demographics, we need, you know, RK selection of, you know, species and of humanity and things like that. The thing is, one, I'm not interested in converting the whole world to libertarianism. I don't think many people actually care about politics in general. I think many people just want to pursue their own self-interest, and if left to their own devices, would do so. And if we applied non-aggression principle today, I think that most people, you know, aside from the insane left and the now rising fascist right, would you know, just generally live their life, you know, pursue their interests and do what they can to make their own life better. And that's mainly what I'm trying to do, you know, but I'm also just trying to educate people, not so much on libertarianism, but just general individualism. You know, the idea that if you want to do something, you can go out and do it yourself. You don't have to rely on any external entity of the government or the state or handouts from this special interest group or this, you know, altruistic progressive forum or anything to try and help you achieve your dreams. And I think that's something that can be applied to any race. And I think any demographic would be receptive to that message if presented properly. The only problem is, you know, as we've seen, especially I'll just say this in terms of the black community, that the general mindset has been dominated by the far left and, you know, progressive Democrats. And there's really the Republican Party has always been seen as, you know, racist, not only because it's perpetuated by Democrats, but also because Republicans in most ways are no better than Democrats. So, you know, the black community doesn't really know about this type of individualism. They know about the individualism when it comes to, their own hustle when it comes to getting, you know, what they want, you know, they're fine. You know, they're against things like the drug war. They're against things like, you know, choking a guy out for selling cigarettes or CDs on the street corner. But when it comes to actual politics, you know, they only see this two-party system that they can't, or they're guilted into going with one side forever.
You may not believe in identity politics, but a lot of people do. And I wondered, do you get any pushback from blacks who say, how dare you say these things? Don't you understand that the possibility that you have right now to exercise the rights you're exercising and to express your views, well, that came as the result of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears by people who have exactly the opposite view of you and have a much more progressive view of the state. And it's kind of, you're being kind of an ingrate to turn your backs on that tradition and embrace this anti-state tradition.
Yeah, you know, kind of like, you know, you're a race traitor, you're a traitor to the cause, you're a traitor to people who fought for your civil rights and things like that. I mean, but honestly, whenever I'm talking about general libertarianism, of course, most of my receptive audience is white. But whenever I do focus on particularly black issues, which I'm going to probably do more of in the future, the reception that I get from black people isn't really, you know, too much of you're a coon, you're a race traitor, you're stupid, you don't know, if we listen to you, we'd be back in chains and stuff. Most of what I hear is, thank you. I've been saying this forever. You know, I get this. I understand your frustrations with organizations like Black Lives Matter. I understand your frustrations with the left and people who constantly live on this Democratic plantation and constantly settle for the lesser of two evils. You know, when Democrats never do anything for us, I'm sick of this victim mentality that surrounds African-Americans in this country. And that's the general, you know, consensus of what I hear, you know, presented to me from other people. And I think that's mainly because a lot of people, a lot of black people in particular, they do share these ideas of individualism and they do want to, you know, go strive to do their own thing and work hard and actually build a life for themselves free of bureaucracy and, you know, the state and altruistic, you know, well-intentioned progressives and things like that. But they are silenced by this. I'm not going to say that it's a minority, because we can see by demographics, you know, Hillary Clinton is way more popular in the black community than she should be. So that tells you something right there. But I think that a lot of people just don't really voice these ideas because they don't see anyone else around them voicing these ideas. And the black community isn't really that known for polite discussion when it comes to dissenting opinions, especially in terms of things as sensitive as, you know, race and anything that kind of goes against the status quo of, you know, the general civil rights or general rights, social rights that are constantly, you know, put out by the left. So the way I see it, you know, most black people should and could be receptive to libertarianism if they know that there are other people in this movement that are willing to listen to them and willing to actually work with them. But, you know, how long that would take to actually get that message out and if it's even possible, you know, who knows? But I'm hoping to do it one voice at a time.
I'm curious to get your opinion on Black Lives Matter. We'll do that after we thank our sponsor. Folks, reviewing the demographic statistics for the Tom Woods Show reminds me that I have an awful lot of men listening to this show. I'll just leave it at that. And I'm willing to bet a lot of you men are shavers. And if you're like me, you want to have a nice close shave, but for some reason, you just can't get the blade to work the way it works for other people. They have this smooth shave and they look like they've got a baby's bottom for a face, and you've got a face that's all hacked up and bloody, and you look like you're in an axe murderer movie. Well, that does not happen for me anymore since I started using Harry's. Closest and most comfortable shave I've ever gotten. I don't have to use electric anymore. Now, here's a great chance for you to have the same experience I did. Harry's will send you their popular free trial set, which comes with a razor, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. And all you gotta do is pay 3 smackers for shipping. Plus, enter code WOODS at checkout, and they'll throw in a post-shave balm for free. So how about that? You get the razor, the five-blade cartridge, the shaving gel, and you enter code WOODS, and you get the post-shave balm for free. Head on over to harrys.com to grab this deal. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com, and use code WOODS. All right, I said I wanted to ask about Black Lives Matter. I actually hadn't, this is terrible interviewing prep on my part. I hadn't even had that written down, but now that you mention it, what would your beef be with Black Lives Matter?
Primarily, my main issue with Black Lives Matter is, well, there's probably quite a few, but for one, this type of intersectionality that's kind of integrated into the movement, this, you know, intersectional, feminist, progressive mentality of, you know, it's not just about, you know, combating police brutality. It's also about, you know, combating things like white privilege and things like capitalism and, you know, trying to, you know, get rid of hostile spaces on campus, you know, trying to make black only safe spaces and all these other basically affirmative action times 10. And they assume that this would help the black community. But even further from that, my primary objection to Black Lives Matter would be the irrational assumption that everything that's wrong with the black community is to be blamed on whiteness. Not just, you know, people in power who happen to be white, but actually whiteness as a concept of its own. You know, the idea that, you know, the only reason that, you know, black men and women are in jail is because, you know, the whole system is set up against black people. And, you know, they're always trying to, you know, find a reason to kill us or arrest us, which in some ways there are objective, systematic, I guess you could say, oppression against black people in terms of things like the drug war, which mainly target, or if they don't intentionally target, they mainly affect minority communities. And also things like, you know, the welfare state that incentivize fatherless homes and dependents and things like that. But they take it to a level where it's no longer, you know, criticizing the harmful elements associated with whatever powers that be. It gets to a point where it's now criticizing anyone who looks like the powers that be, anyone who has white skin, anyone who, you know, isn't basically in the hive mind of Black Lives Matter, that, you know, I really don't know that their solutions, because the solutions they propose to help the black community, I mean, some of them in terms of, you know, the police brutality element, some of them kind of sort of a little bit makes sense. I mean, I know their intentions are to help black people, but the outcome as it just doesn't make sense. And I think that's in part due to lack of education in these communities. You know, there's a lot of emotional reaction to these types of events and these types of issues rather than actual, you know, logical rationale behind it and thinking about the situation and actually critically analyzing what solutions have worked in the past, what solutions may work in the future. It's really just, you know, I feel bad that this is happening and it hurts my feelings. So let me react on my feelings rather than reacting on the facts of the matter. And the facts of the matter is white officers shooting black people is not the primary issue that's you know, harming the black community by any stretch of the imagination. You know, before we even, I mean, of course, that shouldn't be ignored, you know, when there's police misconduct and, you know, police just shooting people for illegitimate reasons or things like that. But before that, we also have to address things that are in our own community that we have the power to solve. And I think that's kind of what the general libertarian message is across the board, is not looking to, you know, solve things via the state or via any external entity or trying to get somebody else to fix your problems for you, but rather actually doing something yourself to make your individual life better. And then once everybody tries to make their individual life better, collectively we'll be better off. You know, so things like actually improving education, not through, you know, getting more funding for the Department of Education, but actually through self-education, actually through, you know, being more involved in in your child's education, you know, things like, you know, focusing on black on black crime, you know, not in terms of, you know, just black people are just killing black people in, you know, the way that the left portrays that people assume it as, but actually, you know, realizing that, hey, there is a culture of particularly young black men having somewhat homicidal issues with other young black men for reasons that amount to nothing more than I've seen this said on a interview, nothing more than basic pussy and pride. You know, someone looked at your girl wrong, or someone stepped on your shoes, or someone, you know, looked at you wrong or said something about you on Twitter. You know, you just immediately go to, you know, trying to find them on the corner and shoot them. And, you know, people may assume that's like a straw man. And, you know, that's not really how, you know, black people interact. And of course, that's not every black person in the world, but it is enough to where it's a major problem for our community. And I think we need to address the actual cultural aspect of what makes of what's harming our community more so than, you know, every blue moon when someone gets shot by a cop.
Let's go back to a totally non-racial question. I want to talk about anarcho-capitalism and minarchism. What was the last lingering argument that was keeping you in minarchism, and how specifically did it get addressed?
Ah, that's a good one. It's been so long. I mean, let me think.
You can't imagine thinking any different way now, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I still, you know, go back and I'm obviously countering these minarchist ideas every now and then and general status ideas. The last one that actually stuck with me was the idea of how would you prevent another state from forming? You know, I don't know why that one stuck with me for so long, you know, but it's just the idea of, you know, okay, if we do get this anarcho-capitalist system, what's to stop, you know, another person from just making another government, or what's to stop someone else from coming over and conquering our land? And, you know, then we're right back in the same situation. But the truth is, the only thing that protects an anarcho-capitalist civilization or society is the same thing that protects any other society, which is collective, general acknowledgement of fundamental principles in that society and the defense of those principles by the general population. You know, I don't know why that one was so hard for me to actually get. I don't know where my mindset was to where I actually couldn't come up with that. But now that I look back on it, it's pretty simple. I see that objection raised quite often. You know, people say, okay, well, if we do ANCAP, if we go full, you know, stateless society, how do we prevent another state from coming about? Or how do we prevent, you know, things like robber barons or, you know, some warlords coming about? It's the same way you prevent, you know, gangs from taking over your community today, or the same way you prevent Russia from invading. Self-defense, you know, I mean, that's the only really way that I can see, you know, out, and of course, in addition to self-defense, things like, you know, voluntary cooperation, you know, to where if you're trading with places like China or Russia, you know, they have a less incentive to come over and destroy, you know, everything that they're basically destroy their dinner plate that's feeding them or the hand that's feeding them. So I think that was the main last lingering argument that prevented me from actually going full ANCAP or full voluntarist, whatever you want to call it.
Do you distribute any of your content in podcast form? Like, can people get your stuff through iTunes, or is it only through YouTube?
At the moment, it's only through YouTube. I've considered doing an archive in the future and trying to push it through things like iTunes. I actually started somewhat, not really a political podcast, but just like a kind of informal podcast called T Just Talking. I've only done one episode of that. If I would do another one, you know, not sure at the moment. But at this moment in time, the primary way to get my content is through YouTube.
All right, I'm going to ask a question in parentheses. So if people don't want to hear the answer to this, they can just skip ahead a couple of minutes. But I'm curious about stuff like this. I look at somebody who's got 80,000 YouTube subscribers at age 22. And I think to myself, it's great that you're spreading this great message and you're an articulate spokesman, and that's all great. But you somehow got to monetize 80,000 YouTube subscribers is my, sorry, it's the way I think. You know, I am the I am the caricature of the capitalist who's always looking for how, because I don't think there's anything antisocial about profit. Profit is the most, is the exact opposite of antisocial. It's the most social thing there is. So I'm curious about that.
In terms of how I monetize?
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable answering that?
Yeah, sure. Primarily, when first starting off, it was through AdSense. Every video, every 1,000 views on a video, I might get, maybe $2.30, between $1 and $2, things like that. But recently, I think a lot of content creators, not only myself, have actually begun to go more towards Patreon, which is a service that is kind of like a recurring PayPal donation system, where it's basically you can either set it up on a monthly basis or a per video or per whatever content you put out basis, whether that be video or drawing or, podcasts or actual, live musical sessions or whatever your talent is, whatever you're trying to get paid for. And your direct donors, your fans are charged, a monthly cycle of whatever they pledge. So if someone pledges, $5 a month, I get $5 every month from them directly for producing my content. And the main thing is, when you're going about trying to actually build an audience, it's much easier, and it's not even easier, but it's also a much better feeling to know that you're directly funded by your fans and people who actually enjoy your content, because you don't feel like you have to, beat around the bush or do anything that you don't really want, or, try and, censor yourself a bit to try and appease sponsors or anything. You just do what the people want you to do, which is usually just being yourself and doing whatever you did to get your content to the level of popularity that it is already. So that's the primary method that I use to monetize, and things like Teespring, selling t-shirts and things like that. That's also a good side.
I'm looking at your Patreon page right now. If you're willing to accept some unsolicited advice, a suggestion I would make, are you on Facebook? I've only seen you on Twitter.
Yeah, I am on Facebook.
All right. I would recommend, as a benefit to people who support you, membership in a private Facebook group, because it doesn't, it's something that you can monitor. People get to talk to you. You get to bounce ideas off each other. You get a lot of ideas from these folks because they're your biggest supporters. And you would think, who's going to support me just to get into a private Facebook group? I would say of all the benefits, I have my own site, supportinglisteners.com. It's just my own site just for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about Patreon, but I'm glad to have my own. I don't have to pay fees to anybody. It's my own thing. But yeah. I've got all kinds of valuable stuff on that thing. I got transcripts of all the interviews, and I got discounts, and I got free this and courses and whatever. But the thing that brought the most people in was the private Facebook group, but by far. And that doesn't really cost anything except time. So it's something to think about. It's worked really well in my community, and you have way, way more people in your community, and it's something you could easily plug at the end of each video. Might be worth a try. I'm twice your age, but you have twice my YouTube subscribers, so you have some wisdom coming from me, but obviously you know what you're doing to some degree, obviously also right now. All right, there's one last thing, just because I can't keep you forever, but when I was on your page, I'm scrolling down, looking at sorts of things that you've posted, and you apparently did a video on the alt-right. So given I already kind of hinted at that at the very beginning with this is a white movement, so there's no point in bothering and all that. And you gave a very good answer to that. What did you say? I didn't watch this video, and I get a lot of people saying I should talk more about the alt-right because they're curious to know what the heck it is. What did you say about it?
Well, the video that you're referring to is actually a parody video. It's basically me describing the alt-right in every opposite way that they are properly, identified as. So, things like they want, more interracial relationships. They want to, kind of counteract white culture and have more global integration, and try and fight nationalism and things like that. It was kind of like a troll video. But my understanding of Y'all Right has evolved the more I've actually been within it. And this isn't a jab against them or anything, but it's just, I think it'll be the most fair and accurate description of what I would say. There's two factions of the Y'all Right. There's the general, you know, average, you know, disgruntled conservative Trump supporter who's, you know, just tired of the status quo and actually wants a little, you know, a bit of a radical shift in the political spectrum, and but still appeals to the same, you know, general conservative things, but are very against things like social justice warriors and, you know, cultural Marxism and things like that. And then there's the, I guess I would say, more academic side of the alt-right, which is more focused on things like race realism, nationalism, or sometimes national socialism, you know, things like nationalist preservation, cultural preservation, cultural, sometimes even so far as cultural isolation in terms of racial demographics. This is what I would say is the fascistic Nazi side of the alt-right, which again, not a jab at them, not trying to say, you know, you're bad for being a Nazi, when it's not the best thing. But, you know, I talk to some Nazis every now and then, and sometimes they're pretty persuasive, because surprisingly, I don't know why so many weird things are happening this election season, but the far right Nazis actually have more reasoned arguments than the far left SJWs or commies. I don't know. I think that's probably something that I need to look into myself, if I'm actually starting to gain appeal to Nazism. That's scary. But yeah, the alt-right is a very interesting wave. You know, some people see them as, you know, somewhat dangerous, and, you know, they see that this shift in terms of political spectrum on both sides, the left going super far, aggressive far left, and the right going super hard alt-right, you know, Hitler sympathies and things like that. They see that as kind of, you know, scary, and one day they're going to clash, and, you know, it's going to be, you know, one's going to win. It's going to either be far left Communland, or, you know, we're going to be back in Nazi Germany. But I see it as that could happen, but mainly I just see it as intellectual discussion. I am particularly actually glad that many of these ideas are actually coming back forward outside of, you know, the shadows, you know, where they've been isolated via kind of like a social taboo, that they're actually discussing these ideas now and actually, you know, saying, hey, this is what I believe. You know, I don't believe that, you know, races should mix. I don't believe that, you know, different people from different societies should be allowed to immigrate to these countries. You know, I don't agree with those sentiments, but I am glad that they're being hashed out and discussed, just because, one, I'm a firm believer in, you know, unconditional free speech, you know, very absolutist freedom of speech, but also because it's just good knowledge. It's just a good way to actually hear different opinions and strengthen your own ideas based on other ideas that you may not have had the privilege of actually hearing from a honest, you know, authentic point of view, because you've been told that it's just so bad and radical that you can't listen to it.
I'm going to have ways people can follow you. I'll have your Twitter and your YouTube channel, anything else that you'd like. I'll be linking to it at tomwoods.com/778. But for people who, believe it or not, there are people who don't visit my show notes pages. I know I find that hard to believe, too. They're so chock full of resources. But suppose somebody didn't visit and they just wanted to go directly to you, where would you send them? How do they get there?
You can either type That Guy T in on YouTube, or type in That Guy T on Twitter, type in That Guy T on Facebook. More or less, you'll see me. I'm the black guy, black cartoon character with a red background. And that's the easiest way to find me. Just type in That Guy T into your search bar.
All right. Well, listen, I love what you're doing, and I'm intrigued by what you're saying and how you're saying it and how you're doing it and how you're supporting yourself and all that. I think it's a great package. I'd love to see more people doing exactly what you're doing, but wonderful. I'm glad we got a chance to talk. I'm glad you Did you initially just reach out to me on Twitter? How did we get in contact in the first place?
I think so. I was doing a questions libertarians have for status video.
That's right. And I just blew you. I didn't blow you off. I did answer you, but I said,
I think you were moving at the time.
The listeners are so sick of hearing me complain about how horrible this move is, but it was horrible. All the different changes I had to make, and you got to get new everything. You know, new car insurance. Can't have the same health insurance you had before. Heaven forbid. So you got to get all. Everything. And I just want to work. All I want to do is work. And all day, it's all this crap related to moving. So yeah. So I'm sorry about that. But if you ever call on me again, I'm available now. But man, was I not available then. All right. Well, I'm glad we made this work, and I'll push the heck out of this episode. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. A few things to tell you about. I've got a new site created by a listener, and it's verlhumphreys.com, because that's his name, but it's spelled a way you might not expect. So it's verlhumphreys.com. I will link to it at tomwoods.com/778. And as a blogger, you might be curious about the way he's organized this. He's got several different blogs, and he puts them all together under the one umbrella at verlhumphreys.com. And as you'll see, well, Verl and I have disagreements on some issues, and he emphasizes things a little bit differently from how I would and so on. But I want you to know about it. He is a PhD in economics, recently minted, and he talks about that and a variety of other topics. So here he is, brand new to the blogosphere. Give him a visit and make sure and get your own little shout out by checking out my link, tomwoods.com/publicity, before you get your web hosting, because I give you all kinds of neat bonuses as you are getting started in this world here, in this online world. What else is I going to tell you about? Oh, yeah, the day after the election. I'm groaning about the election, not the wonderful show I'm going to do the day after the election. I'm going to be talking to Michael Malice, and we'll get the episode out to you as early as we can. We're going to do it that morning. Actually, I have to double check with him to see he's going to be up early enough to do this. We're going to do it in the morning. The day after the election will be episode 779. We'll get it out as quickly as possible just to talk about what it all means. And I think that'll be fun. Also, it's going to be taken down this coming Sunday, November 13th, 2016. So if you missed that little demonstration about how my mom created a niche site that she could sell Amazon affiliate products through, and they're high ticket products, so you don't have to sell a lot to make a good commission dough. If you want to see how that's done, then check out the replay at tomwoods.com/mom. All right, that's it. Let's cross our fingers that by some miracle, Ron Paul gets elected tomorrow. See you later.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.